Hello and welcome to the Forbes India Cover Story podcast series in association with theindicars.com. My name is Abhishek, and this week Forbes India takes a crack at a particularly interesting subject which affects the whole of India, not as a consumer, but from the national security standpoint. It's an aviation and defense special, and joining me to talk about it is Manu Balachandran, who's anchored and authored a bunch of stories in it. Hi, Manu. Thanks for joining in.
Hi, Abhishek. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. And before we dive into different subjects that you've written about, you'll have to first try and briefly describe how the industry works. Who are some of the government players, perhaps? What is the remit of this cover story itself? What did you guys set out to achieve?
Basically, we wanted to take a hard look at where the defense sector is today. You know, the defense sector for a very long time, I think, not to take any sides as far as political parties are concerned, but, you know, until this whole Make in India initiative had happened, the sector had long been extremely dependent on imports. Not to say that it's not now, but it had been extremely dependent on imports, which meant, you know, even the guys who were manufacturing in India didn't really have too much of a role to play, except that, you know, when there are licensed products, that are being, the technology is passed on here, you just manufacture. But today that is not the case. And there's a lot of focus on Make in India. The government has put on 1,000 odd products on an import ban so that, those are actually manufactured in India and sold, for the defense sector in the country. India is expected to spend about $130 billion over the next 7 years. And that's just to modernize the military. For a very long time, the sector has suffered because of poor planning. There had been, you also probably have read about them, corruptions, whether it's right. From Bombers to the Augusta Westland and things like that. So that's where it had been. But we've seen a lot of traction over the past few years. The whole idea actually germinated from when we were looking at the rich list last year, and there was an interesting company called Solar Group, of which Mr. Satyendra Nuval was on the Forbes rich list. Mr. Nuval's company, he's into ammunition, and they've had a great run on the stock market all through last year, which is how the whole idea started. And we wanted to look at, some of the key players in the defense sector. And defense and aerospace more or less, go hand in hand. And that's how we basically set out to, write about the sector.
And you've taken a rather hard look at Tata Advanced Systems Limited, or TASL, which wants to build, as you write, India's first privately made military aircraft. Tell us a bit about the organization itself, and how long has it been in play?
So from what I understand, and when I spoke to the CEO of TASL, the whole idea about setting up a defense wing started sometime in 2006. At that point, Tata Group was, of course, led by Mr. Ratan Tata. The idea was, of course, there was an opportunity in defense. It's just that nobody really knew how to tap it because you were not really going to make in India. But what they started out was, it is an opportunity in the aerospace division when, big companies, whether it's Boeing, whether it's Airbus, all of these guys have been looking at manufacturing parts for their products, outsource them from their base in US or Europe and wherever. So that's how Tata saw an opportunity there. They started with manufacturing parts for helicopter, then it moved on to aerostructures for some of your big aircrafts, whether it's Boeing 737, Boeing 787, Boeing 777, and so on. So initially it started out with manufacturing those aerostructures for the big aircrafts and things like that. And of course, defense helicopters and aircraft. They then moved on to platforms, which basically is what is happening now with the Airbus C295 aircraft, which is going to be, for the first time, a military aircraft that's going to be manufactured in India. Not that, all the avionics and, all of that is built by Tata's. A lot of it will be brought in by Airbus. It's because apart from the major parts, a lot of the assembly will happen in India. But it's still a significant sort of a milestone when it's 40 of them are going to be manufactured here, and it's going to be sold to the Indian Air Force, which is looking to replace some of its Avro aircraft. That apart, Tata also has two more divisions, which is basically the land mobility. Now, that was earlier run by the Tata Motors division. You see these big sort of trucks and, those those vehicles. And they have a weapons division as well. So these are basically the four divisions that function under under Tata Defense Companies. The idea sort of started, like I said, it was in 2006, 2007, the company started functioning, initially aerostructure parts, and then moved on to the other part of things.
And the lead time for these products, as I might guess, or anybody might guess, will be quite long, isn't it? How does it work? It's a private firm. It's for profit. How does that work? Where does this sit in Tata Sons' grand scheme of things?
I think they're very bullish on the sector. Imagine you're starting out with this aircraft, which will it's a 21,000 crore project for the Indian government. So their revenues have generally been growing over the past 5 or 6 years, which you will see in the story also. But I think they have bigger ambitions now. They're spending time on their own sort of indigenous technology. They've developed their own loitering munitions. They're also in partnership with DRDO. They have developed something called the ATAGS. It's basically an artillery gun that started actually in 2013 when DRDO partnered with Bharat Forge and Tata Advanced Systems Limited, basically to manufacture these guns. And they're basically, you can replace, they look to replace the older guns with these sort of 155mm artillery guns now. So they have a whole sort of scheme of things that they have planned, like I said, in sensors, in radars, in vehicles. There's a lot of export opportunities also. Companies are looking, say, for instance, I believe Armenia wants the ATAGS gun now. So they will at some point strike a deal with either Bharat Forge or TSL, and then, they'll acquire those guns. So there is a massive export opportunity available, and India itself, wants to move away from being an importer to becoming an exporter also at some point, right? So which is where opportunities are available for all of these guys. And on the side, of course, TSL continues to manufacture, whether it's a fuselage for the aircrafts, your commercial aircrafts, or even for defense aircrafts.
Right. And the investments also is staggering, right? If I remember the figure from your cover, you write that Tata Sons has invested some 2,279 crores, or plans to. Is right. Would you be right? Yeah.
Yeah, that was, I think, according to a report from one of the brokerages, because it's a private company. So we still don't know the extent of, how much money they have put in. But I think that was a number that had come from, I think, one of the brokerages. Yes.
Right. And you've also written a long one on India's oldest aircraft manufacturer, Hindustan Aeronautics Limited, or HAL, right, which is led by now CB Anandakrishnan. How far back does it go?
HAL, of course, was set up sometime in the 1940s. It was set up as a private company by this very well-known businessman, Walchand Hirachand Doshi. He had also founded, your Premier Automotive Limited, PAL, that made Fiat cars. Also, the first shipyard in the country. And so this company was set up in 1940. And I think the Mysore royal family was also at that point a part of the ownership. But of course, the Indian government saw a massive opportunity. It was also around the same time of World War. So they also saw, initially they became a shareholder, but eventually they took over control of that whole manufacturing business for manufacturing aircrafts. Over a period of time, they did manufacture, the Curtiss Hawk fighter, the Waltee bomber aircraft, and so on and so forth. When India, of course, got independence, it was placed under the Defense Ministry. And sometime in the 1960s, there was another company called Aeronautics India Limited that was then set up to do license manufacturing in India. So both these companies were merged to create a bigger sort of monolith called Hindustan Aeronautics Limited. So that was in 1964. But what happened is, initially HAL was focused on developing their own indigenous sort of aircrafts, whether it is in the fighter or in the transport or helicopters and so on and so forth. They were all entirely focused on developing their own technology. But strategic reasons, at that point, we needed, your MiG aircrafts and so on and so forth. The Indian government got into agreements where we would do the license manufacturing in India. Eventually, what happened is HAL turned all its attention towards manufacturing these licensed aircrafts, and their own programs took a backseat. And it was only sometime in the late 1980s that they started work on what is called the Tejas aircraft now, which is basically an indigenous sort of fighter aircraft. that work had been on since the 80s, and I think the first of the lot has actually been inducted only in 2019. At the same time, now they are working on generating the second generation of that, which is basically the Tejas Mark 1A, and simultaneously working on Tejas Mark 2, which is going to take another 5-6 years. But in the meantime, I think from next year onwards, they want to start manufacturing the Mark 1A, which is basically the bridge between Mark 1 and 2. They are supposed to manufacture about 83 aircrafts for the Indian Air Force. They will get into manufacturing that. Alongside, they also have a whole sort of helicopter business where they've developed 4 indigenous helicopters. Those are also being developed. So HAL in many ways has moved from being a licensed manufacturer now to developing their own indigenous aircrafts, made in India products, which of course, I mean, at the end of the day will have potential as far as exports are concerned.
Right. I'm curious to know that as a journalist, do you get a ride on any of these machines when you are as part of the research?
No.
You seem to know.
Not at all. I mean, coincidentally, and my father-in-law was in the Indian Air Force.
Ah.
So whatever little, I mean, I've heard here and there about the Indian Air Force.
After marriage, it must have been some dinner table conversations. But
yes.
and also the outfit has grown significantly in the last couple of years. You write that at least the market cap. What do you attribute that to? From 67,000 crores is what you write in August 2022 to well over 1.1 lakh crore.
It was about 20,000 crore in 2020. And that has actually become close to 1.2 lakh crore right now, which is a phenomenal jump. And I think a significant reason of that is entirely this whole focus on Make in India by the Indian government. Because all of these aircrafts that the Indian government now needs, bulk of it is going to come from Made in India aircrafts. You look at it, the last time Indian government imported aircrafts was with Rafael. Post that, you know, whatever the new orders, whether this 83 aircraft stages, that's actually come from, that is actually going to go to the Hindustan Aeronautics Limited. Next generation will also, is also sort of going to come from HAL. Then I think they're also developing something called the IMRA or the medium combat aircraft that's in the works now. You know, there's a whole lot of aircrafts that HAL is going to manufacture for the Indian government, which I think investors see massive opportunity. And you look at what their order book is. I mean, they're looking at they're sitting on an order book of 84,000 crore. They see another 48,000 crore apart from that in the pipeline. And then there's a further visibility of another 60,000 crore. When you say further visibility, you know, these are, and they are pretty certain that these projects will come to them, but these are going to be helicopters for the Indian Navy and so on and so forth, which is what I think investors are also found interesting.
Excellent. And in the interest of time, Manu, you've got another 2 stories. Maybe you could just help us with a summary of the transformation of Air India that everybody is looking at, moving from the defense side to the consumer angle as well. So how are they doing now? And is it too soon to call Air India's future as such? And how is that turnaround coming along? Obviously, it is also based on a bunch of external factors. It's not that Air India can do everything by itself. But so far, how do you see that?
I think they've done reasonably well considering, you know, the external situation, because there is a massive sort of supply shortage right now, whether it's for parts, whether it's for aircrafts and so on and so forth. So the pace at which Air India, you know, with all of the Tata might want to move things around, they may not be able to do all of that so quickly. But I think they're trying to change a lot of the fundamental problems that they've had with the airline, for so many years. It has faced underinvestments, you know, whether it's in technology, whether it's in the human resources. So they've been trying to fix all of that, whether it's in their reservation system, you know, hiring more people, hiring more pilots, getting more aircraft. So you see the mammoth sort of order that Air India has placed for 470 aircrafts from both Boeing and Airbus. And that's the largest aircraft order in the world. So the intent is clear. They've tried to fix all sorts of small problems. They will have some teething problems, you know, going forward, but fundamental structural problems they've tried to address, like I said, you know, pumping in money, fixing those investments into technology, human resource, things like that. The rest of it, of course, is external. Even the Boeing CEO talks about it in this package. India is going to see about 2,200 aircrafts that's going to come in the next 20 years or so. So the opportunity is massive in Indian aviation, and which is what Air India is sort of gearing up to tap. So they're here for the long run. And you'd also look at Air India. Now, Campbell Wilson has come in at a time when, of course, you have to fix all of this issue. At the same time, you're looking at merging four aircrafts into two. So there is Air India and Vistara, which they want to merge into one full service carrier. And there is Air Asia India, and there is Air India Express, which they want to make into a separate low cost carrier. You have to go up against the might of IndiGo, both in the international and domestic market. So they're trying to do a lot of things in a sort of relatively short time. But I think, personally, I do think that they've done fairly well so far.
On one hand, you have an airline which has been around for generations. And then you have Akasa Air, about which you've done a story, which has just launched not too long ago. And it started with one aircraft. And how is it doing now? And what are some of its ambitions in an industry which is crowded? But then you also have the likes of Go First or Go Air, which has recently declared insolvency. So in that light, where do you see Akasa Air and what are some of its goals?
Akasa, I think, is a fairly interesting story. I mean, they started operations in 2022, soon after COVID. And COVID, you know, I mean, hit the airline industry, I think, the worst. I mean, no other sector sort of faced so much of a headwind compared to the others. So they started in 2022. And if you actually see it sort of, as Vinay Dubey says in our story, it sort of stemmed from a frustration. I mean, he was the CEO of Jet Airways, and then Jet Airways went down. He was the CEO of Go Air, which is now Go First. And then COVID happened. And then, of course, he resigned. So it was basically a bunch of sort of professionals, you know, whether it's Vinay Dubey, whether it's Aditya Ghosh, because it was all backed by Rakesh Jhunjhunwala. But, you know, they've got a whole bunch of professionals who stepped in, and they started with an aircraft. Now they are close to, they're I think, at 19 aircraft, waiting for their 20th aircraft, which is likely in the next month or two. The moment you have 20 aircrafts, you can start flying international routes. International routes are a great source for money. In such a short span, they've grown their market share in about 10 months from zero to about 5%. Of course, I mean, late, it has also been helped by Go First shutting down operations. But Akasa has had a growth that is unlike any other airline in India and perhaps across the world, that in 10 months, you've grown your fleet from zero to almost 20. You're servicing good routes, and you've also about to start international operations. Which speaks volumes, I guess, about the management and about the airline. Now, we'll have to wait and see what happens, you know, because cash burn is very high. You'll have to see whether the Jhunjhunwala family remains invested in the company. So it's going to be quite interesting about how they go ahead.
Lovely. Thanks, Manu. I think you've given just about a good teaser on some of these private enterprises as well, in addition to the defense side of things. Thank you very much for your time on this podcast, Manu.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Abhishek, for having me.
Thank you. And all you listeners, you can get this podcast on ForbesIndia.com or in any other app that you use to download such content. And to have someone call you for a Forbes India subscription, message Forbes to 51818.